Are you intrigued by conspiracy theories and the strange, dark, and mysterious? If so, we invite you to subscribe to our new podcast, The Truth Behind the Lies, produced by 1950 Studios and distributed by the Limitless Broadcasting Network.
Do you love podcasts and classic television? Do you want to listen to Secrets Uncovered, the Truth Behind the Lies podcast and rant radio, completely ad-free? At Limitless Broadcasting Network, we bring you all your favorites like The Carol Burnett Show, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, and I Love Lucy without any interruptions. For just $7 a month and $80 a year, you can unlock over 90 hours of quality television and podcast programming. Don't miss out. Subscribe today at limitlessbroadcastingnetwork.com, where endless entertainment awaits.
We have 9/11. It kind of reminds me of when Pearl Harbor happened. Or because that was, the president knew Pearl Harbor was going to happen before it happened. And it was just an excuse for us to get into the war. Just like
they knew that these planes were going to be hijacked well before they were hijacked.
Right. And people,
I'm not so sure
the government that. But they would get in trouble or they would get arrested if they tried to stop it.
Well, because they needed it.
Right.
And they're, you know, I personally, could they have put those planes into the buildings? Absolutely. Do I believe the planes are what brought down the buildings? I do not. Do I think that there was something else added to these planes as they went in? Most likely. Or did they have, you know, directed energy strikes? Did they have missiles? Did they have bombs implanted in the planes as they were flown in? I think most of the passengers on these planes were incapacitated. There were reports. I can't remember which plane it was. This lady got a phone call out. And she said there was gas coming out of the vents. She was trying to call her husband, and she was talking about there was gas coming out of the vents and people were falling unconscious. So,
we can find that. I never heard that.
You didn't hear about that one?
I did not hear about that. Tell me more about that.
That was covered on Alex Jones's show.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's the king of covering the 9/11 conspiracies and stuff.
It's hard to find these days.
I think a lot of the 9/11 stuff
has been scrubbed out.
Absolutely. Just looking up stuff for this episode, you find a lot of debunked conspiracy theories. You can't really find anything that actually shows you a spot for true conspiracy theories. It'll give you a list, but it'll tell you the debunked.
Right.
You know.
Right. No, I agree 100%. Looking up this, trying to figure out like what's A to B, when the president knew stuff, when he didn't know stuff, just how the buildings fell. Well, I was watching the video. Demolition. It was steel can't melt, and you remember
steel can melt, but not at that temperature.
So at a certain temperature, it will melt. But like when the plane hit it and they were like, all this fuel helped it melt. That's not true. It's not hot enough.
But they said that it got hot enough to weaken the steel. Okay, I'll give you that. If it weakened with the winds, it doesn't matter how calm a day it is. The wind that those buildings have hitting it at all times.
Oh, for sure.
If it weakened, it would have collapsed like that.
Right.
And it would have taken out all kinds of people in building. Right. It wouldn't have come down.
It's
going
to collapse to the side since people can't see you. So it's going to collapse to the side.
It wouldn't have pancaked like that. You know what I'm saying? It wouldn't have come like
straight down. It would have collapsed to the side.
Right. So I don't buy it. I never have. And most of the people who have heard these stories or were around during it don't believe it either.
Right.
Well, it doesn't matter. You can prove any theory. If you throw enough money at it and find the right people to scream about it, you can prove any side of your story.
Absolutely. And
I believe that they have just found, you know, quack scientists who say that, you know, the planes themselves were the ones that took down the buildings.
You know
what I mean? Like the jet fuel and the paper and cardboard, whatever else was inside there, was enough to bring down those buildings.
Right. Are you fighting with your dog?
I am.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Is she trying to play with you?
While I'm on, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what my dogs try to do. So 9/11, all the what do you think their agenda was? Do you think it was overall the Patriot Act and then going into Baghdad?
I think it was a multifaceted plan. I think that in order to get everybody on board with being able to do such a...
So you needed something to happen.
In order to do some kind of attack like that and to get people on... Because, I mean, we're talking about a domestic attack.
Right.
A very large domestic attack. We're not just talking about the Twin Towers. We're talking about putting the Pentagon into it. And then the other plane that went over, what was it, Pennsylvania that went down?
Yeah, there were supposed to be like four planes.
Yep.
One went over Pennsylvania. One was going, and then they said a plane hit the Pentagon.
Yep.
But did you hear the reporter say, there's no plane here? There's right. nothing. There's no Somebody plane there. Live and on plus, air saying that.
The hole where the plane supposedly went into the Pentagon was too small.
Right.
It's too small. There's no way that a Boeing 747 would have made that small of an impact.
Plus, right.
We're talking about DC. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You mean there's no restricted way. Airfields there are in DC?
Do you if know you how come within a certain amount of miles, they'll shoot you down, regardless if you're a commercial airline or not.
Right.
You're getting shot down.
Absolutely.
So you're telling me a commercial plane made it that far without fighter jets being scrambled and being right alongside that thing and taking it down if they had to? No. Give me a
somebody,
break.
Somebody who should have known about this. Like you
Everybody
can't
knew about
far.
It. We're talking about radar.
Right.
Just radar. Just primitive radar. Damn plane when it was 300-400 miles away from it. They knew the trajectory it was on. They knew exactly where it was going.
Why do you think they didn't do that? Why did scramble jets and shot it down?
They did. I'm sure they did. That plane didn't hit the Pentagon. They used that as a distraction.
As a distraction for something else.
And had a missile strike that hit the Pentagon. That's the only thing that could have moved fast enough and create that kind of damage and get past our defenses and do the damage it did to the Pentagon. They used a smart bomb, a smart missile that went in there and just, boom, took it out. That was it.
Do you remember right after 9/11, any cameras, like any buildings, like if you're a 7-Eleven and you had a camera facing in there,
it's all confiscated.
Yeah, they went in there and confiscated all the video right after the attack.
Right.
And they did it to every store.
Yes, they did.
Why would they do that? Because they want something covered up.
Yep. They're afraid of what people might see or what might get released. And during that time period, you know, our technology wasn't what it is. There was no way to instantly share it.
Right.
Today, you could. There's no way you could get away with that.
Facebook.
Right.
What was the popping social media platform back then? I don't even think we had one yet.
MySpace?
I think it was MySpace. Yeah. But I don't even think people were sharing this on MySpace.
No, it really wasn't much. Nobody was doing that kind of stuff, you know?
Right.
I mean, your cell phones, we still had, you know, one button scroll through your letters on top of the number to try and send a text.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely.
So, yeah, that was a different time.
It's been confirmed that MySpace was the key social media back in those days. So thank you for the confirmation, Samantha. So I got a text. She was like, oh, it's MySpace.
Yep.
So can you imagine being in the building at this time? And like the people that were there.
Oh, yeah.
They were just like hopping out of the windows. What do you think their last thought was? Like, I'm going to die
one way or another. I'm going to die. So I'm going to go at my hands. Either I'm going to burn alive or I'm going to.
I'm assuming that's why people jumped.
Yep.
Because the fire was so. So it went into like the first plane got hit like the 52nd floor or the 60th floor. And the other plane hit like.
Well, see, here's the thing. 25th
floor.
There wasn't really fire. You can watch any videos of that at all. You see some smoke,
right?
Because there is a little bit, but it's not like it was a roaring, fire that was stopping people from getting out. Those planes hit stairwells. They hit elevators and stairwells. They blocked off those they blocked off the exit, so all those people were trapped.
Right. So before the actual attacks happened, I hear they were working on the elevators with armed guards around them, like days before it happened. And people are like, that's weird. Why do these technicians need all these armed guards around them? Why are they working?
So they could disable all the methods of escape for all these people.
Right.
You can take down a building, but if you it's a tragedy if the building goes down, but it is a true disaster if the loss of human life is enormous.
Right. And that's why they want as much loss of life that day. Almost 3,000 people were killed.
Human life means nothing to these people.
Absolutely not. Nothing. We're both expendable. Highly expendable.
It's not just us both. It's everybody on this planet. There are the haves and then there are the have nots. They believe that they are entitled to everything, and we are
their slaves.
The serfs. We are the ones that if that expression, in order to make an omelet, you have to break a few eggs. We're their eggs, and they don't care how many eggs they break. I mean, they just don't. That's where human resources comes from.
Right.
We're just a resource.
Right.
We're the dumb breeders. You know what I mean? So.
Right. Right. No,
that's
absolutely
the way they look at us.
People in the building on 9/11, the people that got out, they kept saying they heard pops. Pop, pop, pop.
Uh-huh.
Before like big explosions happen.
Yeah, it's the explosions. It was the explosives going off, getting ready to detonate the building so it could drop, taking out the support beams.
Absolutely.
It happens at any demolition.
If you look at when they tore down the Wynn or the Stardust from the casino out in Vegas, it went down the same way the towers went down.
Yeah,
the same identical thing. And then they say, no, a plane did this.
Nope. There's no way. And I mean, anybody who's a rational thinker, I mean, you don't even have to be the smartest person on the planet. If you just look at it logically.
Right.
There's no way. No way that makes sense to you. It doesn't matter how many times this is the definition of gaslighting. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And people that actually believe that this happened. I mean, I believe the tragedy happened. I believe the disaster happened.
Right.
That is not, but it's the method that they use to create this disaster.
Right.
And they did it to us. And our own government was complicit in doing this.
Well, it's not the first time the government has been complicit to do things like.
No, not at all.
In Cuba. They were trying to get us into war in Cuba. They were thinking about hijacking some bus and killing a bunch of people and saying the Cubans did it. And that would have got us to go out to war with Fidel Castro.
Yep.
But for some reason, that didn't happen. Pearl Harbor was an inside job. They knew exactly when the bombs were going to be. I mean, that's confirmed to this day. What else? I mean, the list can go on and on that it kind of reminds me of what we did to the Indians. We were friends with them, and then we gave them all these blankets full of smallpox and everything, and we just wanted their land.
Right.
And so it's kind of something like that.
100% it is.
So what do you think the outcome has been from all this?
The Gulf of Tonkin, that was another one that got us into Vietnam.
Explain that one for the viewers.
For the viewers, Gulf of Tonkin?
Yeah.
It was a, let's see, let me get it right. It's where the United States forces were carrying out covert amphibious operations on the North Vietnamese, and they were blaming it on others to get us into it.
Okay.
To get our involvement in Vietnam, because we were trying to stay out of it.
Right. We were trying to stay neutral.
Yep.
So
it was kind of the same with World War II. You know, we were staying out of that one.
I know. And I agree. Then
Pearl Harbor hit and we were in the war.
Yeah. And that they knew exactly if that happened, there would be an outcry of support. And then Americans, have you ever noticed if something happens to this country, we come together, Americans come together and want to fight.
Yeah.
That's one thing that they weren't counting on, especially with 9/11. The unity of being an American was so strong, especially after it went down. Oh, I'm a proud American, and everybody hanging up their flags. They counted on that. Nowadays.
They knew that. They knew that was going to happen. They knew that that was the perfect. They use predictive programming. They know exactly what it takes to push people to get the desired reaction that they want. They knew exactly what to do to get us right where they wanted us. We hook, line, and sinker agreed to the Patriot Act.
Oh, absolutely. We begged for it.
We had that security now, but yes. We gave up all kinds of liberties for it.
They can legally spy on us without warrants. Yeah, they can enter our property without warrants. If they think you're a terrorist, they can hold you indefinitely without going to court because of the Patriot Act.
Well, you got to really read these things because they can't just do this stuff, but it's real easy to classify you as something. It's real easy. I mean, you'd be surprised how loosely they use domestic terror. You know what I mean? They can put that title on anybody basically.
Well,
because it doesn't take very much to be called a domestic terrorist because all you are is
ties into the 9/11 as well.
Ish. Yes. He found out the truth about what was going on with the country, and then he decided he was going to do some rectification for it.
And that's how, right.
But, I mean, that's one version of it. The other version is he was an MK Ultra.
True.
You know, he was, what's the word I'm looking for? He was
a Manchurian candidate?
Well, under MK Ultra,
you can
he
go
was one of the. They just used that kind of mind control programming, round him up, sent him in there, and let him do his thing. I mean, he was the perfect patsy for it.
Right. I mean, we definitely should do an episode on the Oklahoma City bombing because that indirectly ties into all of this. We'll see what you think.
Right.
There's so many, like all these conspiracies are so convoluted. They're all interconnected.
Well, the problem with 9/11 is that so many people died
for greed.
It was greed. I mean,
it was over greed.
It was greed for some. It was over power control and, you know, the ability to spy on us all by some. It was over a family's, you know, butthurt philosophies, you know, that they wanted to get in there and get their name back, you know. Mm-hmm. But also there were items in Iraq that other power structures wanted control of.
Right.
You know, Iraq is supposedly had a working Stargate, and whoever has control of those Stargates has control of a lot of things. That's interdimensional travel right there.
Right.
Not to mention all the antiquities that proved where civilization began and where we came from. And the truth behind the Anunnaki.
That's exactly right. You're talking about the Anunnaki.
And those who control that kind of stuff control the true power. I mean, greed and family vendettas and things like that, that's minor stuff. But it's when you get into the real things, the beginning of our species, you know?
Right.
Controlling the actual
world.
Controlling the implements that help these interdimensional beings go back and forth, you know?
Right.
That's a pretty profound power to have control of. And to have a working one. And I've heard that it's not the only working one, and there's a few of them in the world.
Where would be another one?
That was an easy one for us to get to, because it was already in a conflict area, so that was easy for us to get to.
Was that in the green zone?
Do what?
Was that in the green zone? I feel like it was. I feel like they made a movie that it was like looking for weapons of mass destruction, and they cleared it. But the reason why they went in there was because of the Stargate.
Oh, well, they've made movies about all kinds of stuff like that. But the only weapons of mass destruction were what was found in these libraries and in these museums. And the true information, you know, because the things that were there could have destroyed religion
and brought it down to his knees.
Religion is the main way to control the population.
Right.
I mean, they've been doing it for a millennia. So if you could topple religions by uncovering what was actually documented in their, you know, physically there, just needing to be shown to people, they're never going to let that out.
You know, absolutely, what I mean?
There's no way. The churches make too much money and have too much control over people. And can you imagine what would happen to people if they were to find out that, you know, their belief system isn't exactly what they think it is? And I'm not here to argue theology with anybody like that. I mean, believe what you want to. That's a great thing about this world. You can believe anything you want. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, there are those who believe in that. What is it? The flying spaghetti monster thing. So
you lost me on that. This flying spaghetti monster. What's that?
What are they? Pastafarians?
I don't know.
Yeah. Let's see.
We don't know.
Yeah, Pastafarianism, also known as the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
I'm saying
you can believe in whatever you want.
Right,
But if there is proof of the origin, you know, the origination of our species in the Middle East, you know,
they're never going to let that out.
That's not going to be something that is ever going to see the light of day.
Absolutely not.
Not just I mean, that's like when they went to Egypt. Every time there's a major archaeological find in Egypt, the governments go in there first.
Right.
And they see what's there before it's allowed to be released to any museum or anywhere like that.
The
Smithsonian is controlled by the government.
And it's very
Have so much stuff that'll never be seen by anybody.
Just like the Vatican does too.
The Vatican's archives books.
I hear they have a working time machine that they can look into the past. They have goggles that you look in and you can see the past and what happened. And it's at the Vatican. They have things sealed off that they'll never bring up. You know?
I do know what you're talking about.
That came out couple years ago. A whistleblower came out and was like, yeah, there's a working time machine there. I can't remember what it's actually called.
The chronovisor
that you could look in the past.
Well, I'm not saying they do and I'm not saying they don't, but if they go through such trouble to debunk and make sure that we don't ever get the chance to see any of these things, you know, it makes me think that maybe there's some truth to it.
So you don't ever think there'll be a time where all this stuff, it just comes out and says, yep, aliens are real. Everything that we've came out and said is a lie. There's people on Mars. Well, we have bases on Mars. All this.
They're working on. I mean, there are some things that are coming out that they have to. It's just getting too hard to control. The way the genie is almost out of the bottle and they can't put it back in. They're starting to have to extraterrestrials. They're slowly starting to admit.
They're there. They're real.
They've told us for 100 years that, you know, there's no such thing as aliens. You know, don't believe this. Don't believe that. If they go back and completely say, you know what, hey, we lied to you. This is what we found. This is what's here. They lose all credibility. People will be in an uproar. Right. There's too many people that are too invested in it. You still have a large majority of the public that will believe hook, line, and sinker whatever the government tells them. And even the ones that do question a little bit are still in the back of their mind like, well, no, there's no way they would actually lie to us, you know, because they're our government. They're for us, you know, and we get new people in there. So how could they pop? Because everybody has a way to be controlled. Right. It doesn't matter who you are. If you make it into politics, they've got a way to control you. Right. They're going to find a way to control you. They're going to find some way to gather incriminating evidence or get you in a compromising scenario.
Something. Everybody can be blackmailed.
And you are going to be under their control. And for most people, it's money. There's no way that these people go into public office, you know, barely rubbing two nickels together and coming out multimillionaires. Right. You know what I mean? Because
they're being paid to keep their mouth shut.
Well, not necessarily mouth shut. It's to push whatever line they want. Or it doesn't matter if it's pushing that, you know, 9/11 was, you know, a terroristic operation, and it was buildings were brought down by planes, and Building 7 was brought down by, you know, a piece of paper was on fire and caught the right draft and blew through the window and came down. You know, it started. Who knows?
They can always find
somebody to do that.
What did they say about Building 7 and why it came down?
They obfuscated that one. They never really gave anything.
But people just filled in the blanks and they were like, well, obviously something happened.
Yeah.
Nobody pushed that topic.
It was pushed, but it wasn't pushed on. If it was pushed on like the news or something like that, it was always shifted to another topic real quick. Right. You were always cut off. You were always spoken over, you know, nothing was ever, the only time it was ever talked about or pushed was through, you know, a conspiracy related show or somebody who was trying to bring upon a different topic or different narrative. Viewpoint. Yeah.
Right.
So,
but they would always make that person look crazy because they're just like, this can't be real. This is what the government said has happened. But if you look at the cold, hard facts, it just doesn't add up.
Well, and that was the thing with Alex Jones. I mean, Alex Jones has a lot of very, very good information on these topics. He put in a lot of legwork on it. Problem is, he's a very eccentric person. And he got wrapped up. You know what I mean? He gave him an inch to run on with him being crazy, and it discounted everything all the true things he brought up before. But this guy.
Subscribe now to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com to finish listening to the episode ad-free.
You're listening to the Limitless Broadcasting Network.
Hey, this is Tyler Mannion. You're listening to You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast. Check it out.
What's your favorite scary movie?
What's the boogeyman?
You hang up on me again, I'll gut you like a fish, understand?
It's showtime.
Hello, guys, and welcome back to You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Sammy.
And welcome back to the show.
Yes.
So today, we are doing Midnight Mass. We're continuing our vampire trend.
Mm-hmm.
But Sammy and I watched that. It was actually surprisingly pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't really know anything about it before we watched it.
Right.
I would say. So, yeah. For what it, for what we didn't know and going into it, yeah, I would agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that 100%.
So anything you want to cover before we dive into the episode?
No, we can just dive in.
All right, sounds good. So yeah, we're going to talk about Midnight Mass, which is actually 4 years old.
Really?
Came out in 2021. Yeah. It's one season, so it's a little, I want to say miniseries, but not with the way shows are anymore. It's a series.
Right.
First episode was released September 24th, 2021. I don't know if Netflix released them all at once or if they did that thing that everybody likes to do now, which is...
They probably broke them up.
Yeah, they may have, but we didn't watch it live, so yeah. But it has 7 episodes in it. And then our summary, this is the tale of a small, isolated island community whose existing divisions are amplified by the return of a disgraced young man and the arrival of a charismatic priest. When Father Paul's appearance on Crockett Island coincides with unexplained and seemingly miraculous events, a renewed religious fervor takes hold of the community. But do these miracles come at a price?
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. So this was created by Mike Flanagan, and the writers include Mike Flanagan, Jamie Flanagan, Danny Parker, Jeff Howard, Ellen Gale. And then our cast, we have Zach Guilford as Riley Flynn. So he's the, disgraced, black sheep.
Of the
who came back.
Community.
Yeah, who returned to the community after he had spent 4 years in prison for killing a woman in a drunk driving crash. Kate Siegel is Erin Green, and she's Riley's childhood sweetheart, and she's now a school teacher on Crockett Island and expecting a child. Hamish Linklater, he was Father Paul Hill, who was the new priest that came back to St. Patrick's Church. Who was there to replace, Monsignor. Yeah, Pruitt.
Pruitt, yes.
Who, spoiler, because as you know, we always have spoilers, is actually also the same guy.
Yes.
So, Pruitt was actually Paul Hill. They're one and the same. Kristen Lehrman was Annie Flynn. That's Riley's mother. Samantha Sloyan was Bev Keen, who's the zealous, overbearing, influential member of the church. She's the one that I wanted to slap most of the series.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Very good job. Great actress, because you're super annoying. Igby Rigney was Warren Flynn. That's Riley's teenage brother, who's an altar boy. I mean, he didn't have a lot to do.
No, he didn't.
No. Raul Coley as the sheriff. So remember, he's Muslim, and that's like a whole thing with all these people. Anna Ra Simone was Lisa Scarborough, the mayor's devout daughter, and she's the one that was in the wheelchair.
Okay.
Who couldn't walk and then was miraculously cured, except very sketchily. Annabeth Gish was Dr. Sarah Gunning, so she's the doctor. Alex Esso was Mildred Gunning, who's the aging mother with dementia, who Benjamin Buttons and de-ages during the show. Raul Aburi was Ali, that's the sheriff's son, who wants to be part of the church. Matt Beidle as Sturge, the island handyman. Michael Trucco as Wade Scarborough, he's the mayor. Crystal Ballant as Dolly Scarborough, Wade's wife. Louis Oliver was Uker. I think I said that right. Warren and Ellie's friend, who's an altar boy. Henry Thomas is Ed Flynn. That's Riley's father. And that's also...
What?
From E.T.
Yes, Elliot.
Yeah. I was trying to give you your moment, but you...
It was Elliot,
you didn't
yes.
take a hint. Yes, he's... Yes. Which, again, he de-ages...
In the beginning, you didn't realize that. I was like, that's the guy from E.T.
And then I felt very weird because I'm like, why does he look so old? But always revealed during the show.
Right.
It was makeup. Robert Longstreet was Joe Colley, the town drunk. Quentin Boisclair was the angel. I think that was the vampire.
Yes.
I'm assuming that's what they refer to as the angel in this. I was like, but not really an angel. Ebony Booth was Tara Beth, and that's the teenage girl that Riley had killed. And then John McDonald was Bull. He was the drug dealer.
Okay.
I don't have much trivia for this. Sorry. So the angel, quote-unquote angel, shares traits with Aluka, a type of vampiric demon. Aluka are first mentioned in Proverbs, same as the episode title where it first appears. And Father Paul is revealed to be a D.H. Monsieur Pruitt, who likely chose Paul as an alias for his new younger self because of the life-changing experience he had on the road to Damascus, like Saul, St. Paul. So,
okay.
Yeah, there we go. Ratings-wise, let me get that pulled up. So, on Rotten Tomatoes, the audience gave it an 80%. IMDb has given it a 7.7 out of 10. And on Google, it's sitting right now at a 4 out of 5. So, I mean, not bad.
I mean, I guess now we don't have a lot of trivia of it.
The last thing really is that a lot of the episode titles are from
the Bible.
Yeah, so episode 1 is book 1, Genesis. Episode 2, book 2, Psalms. 3 is book 3, Proverbs. 4, book 4, Lamentations. Yeah. 5 is book 5, Gospel. 6, book 6, Acts of the Apostles. And then 7, which is the final episode, book 7, Revelation. So that's where all the titles came from.
That makes sense about why it would be Revelation at mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. But yeah, we can just dive into the show in okay. general. We definitely thought it started off slower.
It was a very slow burn.
Based on the ratings for the episodes, I would say probably most people agree with us because the lowest rated are the first couple of episodes. Because yeah, I think it's...
Nothing really happens. I mean, I know you have to build the story, but...
Yeah. Because episode...
Episode...
I mean, episode 1... is really like this guy, he gets in an accident right at the beginning. He kills this young woman. He goes to prison, you know, and then he's released.
Out.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of establishing him as a character, I guess, and returning to this small island. But
right.
Not a lot
really happens. I mean, you find out he's being haunted by the girl he hit. Like, every day he mm-hmm. goes to shut his eyes and he sees the girl.
He sees her, yeah.
He sees mm-hmm. the girl.
Mm-hmm.
And he's always reminded of what he did and he can't escape it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he gets released and he has to come back to this isolated town. He has mm-hmm. no money,
mm-hmm.
no job.
Nowhere to go.
And yeah. he just feels stuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And then in episode 2, that's when the storm comes in and they have the potluck.
Yes.
And the new priest comes in that episode. I believe that's when he shows up.
The biggest thing out of that episode is Monsignor or...
Yeah, Monsignor.
Talks to the brother, the main
star. Well, is he a Monsignor or just a priest? I don't know.
About... Because part of his parole, he has to go to drug and alcohol classes, like mm-hmm. AA. And he was like, well, we can just open a chapter here so you don't have to keep going on the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
Because he would have to go from the island, take a boat to the mainland, and be gone pretty much all day.
Yeah, literally like a boat or a ferry or something.
So he opens basically a AA meeting, and mm-hmm. it was just the two of them to start out.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it saved him a ferry ride.
Yeah, I mean, it was nearby, right?
Yeah.
It makes sense. And, you know, this new priest comes in, and it's a big deal because he does things a little bit differently.
Right.
And he's saying that, like, the previous one is ill from his travels, but he's resting, and it seemed... I mean, I feel like you could tell something was, like, off.
Right.
But I didn't really know...
very fishy. You were just like, what's really going on here?
Yeah, we knew vampires were involved in this. Like, we knew that basic amount
going in this.
Yeah. So we were like, well, clearly, like, a vampire or something got him, right? Like, that's really, because also Riley mentions during the storm, he looked out and he saw Monsignor Paul walking around.
Did he actually see him? Was he actually walking
what
around?
What I think he saw was the new guy. Dude.
Right.
Yeah, well, he's not new. It's the same guy. But, you know, walking around in his clothes because it's the same person. I think because he mentioned specifically it was, like, the jacket or something he was wearing. Like, it was something he was wearing, and he was like, oh, my gosh, it's him. Because he didn't see his face or anything. Right. And then the next day, all those cats and stuff were dead. And that's clearly because this bro is struggling and turning into a vampire.
So he's feeding on all the cats.
Yeah. And he just left all those, like, stray cats on the beach, and everyone freaked out the next day.
Yeah.
Right, sleep. I mean, yeah, you should.
My question to you is, when you're a vampire, how hungry are you? Like, they always say, oh, I want more and more and more and more and more. Mm-hmm. That means you're never done. You're never satisfied. You're never full. Mm-hmm. Like, you and I, when you and I eat.
I don't know. I feel like it depends on the vampire lore, maybe, a little bit, what you're looking at. Because I feel like some of them in Chew treat it more like us. Like, they feed, and then they're like, all right, I'm cool for a little while. And then, like us, eventually we get hungry again, right? And we need to eat something.
Right.
Except for them, they only eat one thing.
Right.
You know? So, I don't know what the deal is.
Right.
Because, I mean, this dude manages to function during the day. I mean, I guess while he's turning. But, you know, during the day and stuff, I mean, he seems pretty okay around people. He's not just attacking everybody.
So, in the beginning episode, when the priest gets there, he's carrying a trunk with him. And you see him come into the house and carrying this big trunk.
Mm-hmm.
What you don't see is what's in the trunk.
Right, which we thought that was fish.
And I was like, what is that?
We're like, what's in the trunk, bro?
But he brought back the vampire.
The angel.
The angel.
No.
That turned him.
Yeah.
So the angel was just kind of hiding out in abandoned buildings on the island.
Yeah, and they thought it was an albatross.
Until it was time to, like, pounce.
Yeah.
Like, to hunt.
So season... The episode, it's not season, episode 3 is when we learn all of this, what actually happened.
Yes.
And I had zero chance of figuring that out on my own. Absolutely none. I had no idea that they were the same people, the same person. Monsignor Paul.
Yeah. Pruitt. Yeah,
Pruitt, sorry. And then Father Paul. Like, I had no idea that they were the one and the same. I don't think you had figured that out either until the episode, though.
I was leaning towards it, but I didn't actually...
I mean, because it's basically you drink the blood of this
angel
who looks fucking creepy, so he's clearly not an angel, but anyway, you drink the blood of the angel, and it fixes you, it makes you younger,
it transforms you life. To your best self.
Yeah.
When you were younger.
Mm-hmm.
So you have no ailments, no nothing,
mm-hmm.
and you're at top physical peak.
Mm-hmm. So that's how he de-ages back to his former self. So same person, but now he is much younger.
So the way Paul, our Senior Pruitt, got changed is he was over... Like, in a foreign land.
Was he in, like, Israel or
something? Israel or something. Yeah. And he was doing missionary work, and he was caught in a storm. And while he was caught in a sandstorm.
Mm-hmm.
And while in the sandstorm, he's, like, this cave appeared out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And he went in there trying to escape the sandstorm. And the vampire, the angel, got a hold of him.
Mm-hmm.
And basically transformed him into a vampire.
Yep.
Now, the vampire eyes kind of like the sinner's eyes. And I think sinners probably borrowed that from this.
That could be.
Because
they obviously have a lot of influence.
They kind of glowed like if you ever looked at a dog's eyes in under with a camera, mm-hmm. and you see them kind of glowing. Mm-hmm. That's what they looked like.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So he turns into a vampire.
Yeah.
He brings him along with them to come back. I don't know how customs didn't check in all this.
I don't know. And I think he truly didn't understand that this thing was a vampire and that it's bad. What was happening? Because, I mean, he comes back and he obviously hasn't really transformed yet because he's able to walk around in the day.
Right.
He's just chilling, living his life. And then all of a sudden he starts having issues.
Right. That's why they call it Midnight Mass. Mm-hmm. It's because he stopped being able to, not just him, the whole town, stopped being able to come out during the day. So, you find out later that the priest, Paul, mm-hmm. is mixing the blood of the vampire in with the sacrament wine.
Yeah, so Riley comes one night to do his AA meeting with Father Paul, whatever you want to call him at this point. I mean, he's Monsieur, yeah, whatever, Pruitt. So he comes to do his AA meeting. Didn't expect, because this is like halfway through, so this had to have been like episode 4. Yeah, I think it was like right at the end of 4 that they're doing their thing, and then I can't remember. Riley comes back because, like, he left, right? And then he came back or he entered the rec center again. I can't remember exactly what happened, but the angel is in there or comes through the door. Do you remember how he attacked him? I can't remember.
He was coming to him to AA.
Mm-hmm.
Because the priest wasn't feeling right.
Mm-hmm.
So he was, that night they were supposed to meet, and he walks in on the guy basically, like, feeding him.
That's right, yeah. And then Riley's toast.
He walks in and, like, the angel grabs him.
Yeah, and I didn't expect Riley to get it. Like, and I thought Riley was gonna be, like, one of the ones at the end, like a hero character.
Right.
No. Mm-mm.
So when that happens, the angel, like, snatches him up real quick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bites him. And then turns him.
Yeah, and that's the end of that episode. And of course, Monsignor Pruitt's trying to act like, oh, you'll be fine. It's like, not, it's a big fucking deal. But he's trying to act like it's not really trying to, you know, calm him down and all that. But then that's when we learn, because he says to the angel, oh, I'm like, I think in that same time, he says I'm out of the sacrament. And then that's how we find out that prior to this, the young woman's able to walk when she hasn't been able to walk for so, you know, like years and years after getting shot by the town drunk. You start noticing
I think that was in episode beforehand. So she gets up in episode 4. She's like, he's like, they're having sacrament.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes to the girl in the wheelchair, and she's like, the body of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts backing up, and she tries to move her wheelchair, and he's like, no,
mm-hmm.
the body of Christ. And he moves up on the stage, and then she finally is like, all right, let's try it. And she mm-hmm. gets up and moves mm-hmm. and starts walking.
Mm-hmm.
And then she ends up taking it. But mm-hmm. the reason why she's able to do that is because she's drinking this vampire blood.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But nobody knows that.
Yeah.
And then after, everybody's like, oh my goodness, it's a miracle.
Right.
Let's all run to church now.
Yeah, everyone starts coming. Mind you, there's some holdouts. So Riley's one, the doctor, some holdouts who don't take the sacrament, the sheriff. They're not really doing all this, right? So they're not getting the effects. But you first see her walk, and then you start kind of seeing around town improvements in everybody. Like the doctor's mother suddenly starts being able to remember more. She's able to get out, and now she can actually come to church instead of having him come visit her.
Right.
Which is what he was doing and bringing the sacrament with him.
Right.
He made sure to visit her, and that's how she got, quote-unquote, better. Like, Riley's mom starts to have more energy, and his dad. Like, it's, like, little subtle things.
Right.
But as each episode goes on, everybody starts to look younger. So the, you know, the makeup they were putting on them to make them look older is like, you know, they're doing less and less. So when you're watching them, they're de-aging, like to the point where the doctor's mother is like younger than her looking, you know, at one point, which is just bizarre.
Very much so.
Yeah. So, but yeah, like you were saying, so Pruitt at one point, because he's going to be a vampire, yeah, he can't go out in the day anymore. So they start doing the midnight mass because they don't have a choice. And right. I mean, like, that's just the way it is. Like, he can't come out during the day, whatever. And they're doing the midnight mass anyway because it's, like, Easter time, right?
Right.
I think so. So that's really where the title comes from because, you know, he's going to be a vampire and that's what has to happen. And what's interesting is, what was the character's name again? That really annoying one. Bev. So Bev is like all up in, like super religious, all up in his business. And she finds him with the town drunk after the town drunk had, it was an accident. The town drunk had gotten injured, killed in his house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forget how they was injured.
He, like, fell. Like, I don't even think Pruitt really did anything to him, if I remember right. Like, I think it really was just kind of, like, a freak accident. He fell and bashed his head open, and, like, that was, he was gone.
Right.
You know, because he was in a lot of grief because Bev had clearly killed his dog because she's an awful person.
Right.
And.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And she comes in and, like.
Doesn't hesitate. She's just like...
Pruitt, like, no. I mean, like, dude died there. There was blood everywhere. And Pruitt clearly fed on him. Like, he's covered in blood. Like, right. Face. Like, it looked super sketch. And she just, you know, she's like, we gotta clean it up.
Walked in nonchalantly and was like, we need to clean up the body.
Like, how fucking nuts are you? And whatever kind of zealot are you?
I mean, the way she justified it, she was like... God has a plan. I mean, you can't look back at these things. And she was just like, we have to move forward. She was very nonchalant about it. Just like, oh, well, we'll keep it moving.
She's crazy.
She's not like, what happened? Why did you do this? Nothing. She's just like, we'll bury the body.
She accepts it all. So that's how she becomes part of his plan. So ultimately the plan becomes, we're going to let everybody... get the benefit of what the angel has given, you know, Monsignor Pruitt.
Right.
We're going to let everybody have that benefit. So everyone's going to become a vampire.
Right.
You know, and it's a whole thing because they're going to kill everybody with rat poison. And you're just supposed to go along with it.
You mean at the mass?
Like, yes.
So let's back up for a second. So the main star, the guy that was in... prison.
Oh, Riley. Yeah.
Riley. Mm-hmm. He was dating this girl.
Well, they were
kind of, they were sweet on each other. Well, yeah, during this time, she was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was going to church and taking the sacrament and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the blood took the baby away, like healed it. Like there was no more baby. And
then
she went into like shock and she was like, what happened to my baby? What happened to my baby? The blood kind of treated like an infection and just kind of killed the baby.
Yeah.
And there was no signs of her being pregnant. Mm-hmm. Nothing.
No.
Mm-mm. And his name was Riley?
Riley.
Riley. After Riley was turned, he disappeared for a day. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because Pruitt was keeping him basically at the rec center.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't go out because it was during the day. And the girl,
Aaron,
was trying to find him,
mm-hmm.
blowing him up. And then that night, he is released, mm-hmm. goes to her house, and he was like, don't tell anybody, just keep going. Well, he's like, I want to show you something. They go out on a boat mm-hmm. in the middle of the ocean, and they're talking. And then, I should mention, the night before all this happened, they were talking about dying.
Mm-hmm.
What would it be like to die?
What's it like when you die? Yeah, what what happens what do you to want, you what after happens Riley every- and Riley said nothing, and then she had this whole speech about like who she would see and, you know, all that.
So after he was turned, he was like, come on a boat ride with me. And we were thinking that he's going to turn her.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, you brought me in the middle. If she was like, let's say all this is right. He basically tells her everything that happened. He's like, let's say you're right. You brought me in the middle of nowhere in a boat where I can't run.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking, oh, this is the time she's going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, no, I brought you out here to show you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would have nowhere to run.
Mm-hmm.
So they stay out on the ocean all night long.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sun comes up and he bursts into flames.
Yep.
She's freaking out. She's like, now she's a true believer.
She knows.
Like, yeah. This is really going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's a true believer in all this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's great that he didn't kill her.
Mm-hmm.
Because that shows how much he really did love her.
Mm-hmm.
So then the plan becomes, yes, we're going to turn the whole town into vampires.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to basically do a Jim Jones. And everybody's going to drink. So the priest is like, oh, we're going to have a special midnight mass ceremony. And we're going to have a special guest. So they start the ceremony. They start the mass. Everybody's starting to drink the Kool-Aid. And once you die, you'll just automatically come back if you've drank the blood.
The sacraments, yeah.
So the police officer that was holding out.
The
sheriff was there. His son was there.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing is the sheriff's son was the first one to do it. He was like, oh, I want to be a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
Drank it. Died.
Mm-hmm.
The sheriff pulls out the gun. Tries it. Like, I think he shoots at Mount Pruitt.
Monsignor. Mm-hmm.
And nothing really happens. I mean,
well, he's a vampire,
he just goes through. He's just like, panic erupts. And then all these people are like, these parents are forcing these kids to drink this Kool-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess the plan was to lock everybody in and then the vampire was going to come.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that plan surely got fucked out of hell.
Yeah, and let's emphasize too, when you return from the dead, you are completed as your vampire self.
Yeah.
Once you do that, because they've been drinking the sacrament. So you die and then you return and you are a vampire.
Yeah, in Vampire Diaries, you die, but you have to feed in a certain amount of time, like on human blood.
I mean, I guess they did that, they just did it first.
To complete the transfer.
Oh, on human blood.
Yeah, on human blood.
Oh, okay. So, not quite the same.
No,
So that's what starts happening is, so half the people are doing it, the other half are not, then, like you said, chaos ensues, and we've got people attacking each other. You know, it's insane because they just all lose their minds.
Right.
So the kids escape. Aaron, the doctor, and the sheriff, they're pretty much the main ones who are like, fuck this.
Right.
We're gonna take everybody out. So, and Bev is like the ringleader, I would say, of the whole thing, because she's trying to keep them from escaping. She's
so weird.
She's just
so
crazy. Weird. Yeah, and then I think it's Aaron, right? Well, who shoots her? Is it Aaron?
Yeah, it was Aaron.
Yeah, to buy themselves some time because she knows she's gonna come back. So, you know, once Bev is like a full fledged vampire, I mean, I thought she was already crazy, but I feel like it definitely amped up when she was, like, full-fledged.
So they come back. So she comes back, and then these group of people that are like, fuck all this, they start, they escape.
Mm-hmm.
They're going into, like, all these the abandoned houses trying to hide.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
these vampires get the smart idea is we're just going to start burning the houses.
Bev starts that, I believe.
So she starts at... So keep in mind, this is one... a small island. I mean, it's not small, but it's kind of small.
It's pretty small, yeah.
So she starts at one end of the island and starts burning the houses. Okay, so number one, you're going to have nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, no, there's no place to hide.
Mm-hmm.
So... Joel, the main star's mom,
mm-hmm.
is like, I'm going to go talk. So they throw a Molotov cocktail into this girl's house, into her house. Mm-hmm. This, what's the mom's name?
The mom?
Yeah. Whatever the...
I can't remember what her
name. Whatever the main star's mother's name, they're at her house, they're hiding out.
Annie.
And they throw, Bev throws a Molotov cocktail into Annie's house.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's trying to escape, and she's just like, nah, I'm going to go out and confront this girl, right? The kid, her youngest son, since her oldest is dead now, her youngest son starts freaking out. He's like, I love you, Mom, and, you know. Knowing this is the last time he's going to see her.
Mm-hmm.
So she comes out and she's like, Bev, I want to tell you, you're not very Christian-like.
True.
Like, basically says all this stuff and Bev is like, that's not very Christian. You didn't have to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And she pulls out a knife and, like, stabs herself in the throat.
Mm-hmm. But, I think she, like, slits her throat.
Yeah, she slits her throat. But she's been taking the sacrament, so she ends up turning.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows she's going to end up turning. But it gives the opportunity for everybody else to get away.
Right.
I'm not... What happened to the pregnant chick? I can't remember. So, oh, that's right. The angel.
During one of the big fight scenes, They were all, so everybody, the vampires were all going to hide out in the recreation center.
Yes.
And so then, of course, the kids had gotten rid of all the boats.
Yes.
Except for one that was hidden, but, you know, the vampires didn't know that. So they got rid of all the boats so they couldn't escape because that was one of Bev's plans when they were, like, some of the other people were like, hey, you dumbass, there's nowhere for us to go, and she's, you know, they have the rec center. Well, then, of course, the humans that were left were going to be like, fuck you, we're going to get rid of the rec center. So, while this chaos is ensuing outside of the rec center, the angel shows up and attacks Aaron.
You're right.
And
while she's getting attacked, she takes a knife
and slices the wings
right
over and over, and the thing kind of notices but doesn't really. Yeah, so she manages to just fuck this whole thing up, you know. And so at that point, it can't really fly very well, you know. It's basically screwed at this point in time. And the others, like they managed to burn the
church.
The church. Pruitt basically allows them to destroy the church. Because I think he sees what's happening and he realizes, especially talking to the doctor's mother, which there's like apparently a whole romance thing between them.
They used to be together.
Yeah, and I believe the doctor is actually...
Their son, their daughter.
Yeah, like...
And you find that out later.
Monsignor's... daughter is the doctor.
The doctor, yeah.
Plot twist. Also, he's a vampire. Her mom is going to be... Like, it's a whole thing. But
right.
But the daughter gets shot at one point. I think it was shot, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's going to die, and then he's just like, you know what, fuck this. You know, just burn the church down.
Right.
Because this is not how it was supposed to be.
Right.
So, basically, like, we don't deserve to live because this is not how it's supposed to be. So, church goes... The rec center goes, and I think a lot of them did blame Bev because they're like, you're an idiot.
Right. You're got like, now where are we going
to
do this?
To be fair, I mean, Pruitt fucked up the whole thing by starting this, but Bev, I think, really escalated the situation.
Oh, for sure.
Like, she, yeah, I mean,
just for saying, sure.
Between the two of them, this is what caused the issues. So basically at the end, they have nowhere to go. The sun's going to come up. So the sheriff got shot. So
they go to the beach.
He goes to the beach with his son and basically sits there until sunrise, but the sheriff's not going to make it.
So he clicks over.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he's not going to come back as a vampire. He didn't drink the sacrament. So that's just it for him. His son's going to burn up. He's a vampire. He's going to burn up in the sun anyway. So they're going to go just do it together. And the Riley's brother and then the young girl, who I still can't remember her name, who was
in the wheelchair.
In the wheelchair.
They're out in a boat.
Yeah.
Watching all
this. They escape out on a boat. Yeah. And they see the island's on fire and the sun comes up. And then basically the entire vampire congregation now
is dead.
Well, they're singing a song together accepting their death. And it's supposed to be the same song that was supposedly played on the Titanic when it went down.
Really? So I didn't know that.
There's a tie in there. Yeah. So they've accepted their fate. They're all going to die. And they listen to them singing, and then you kind of hear it fade out as they all burn up.
You know, there was a there was kind of like a little bridge connecting a creek and, you know, a little walkover bridge, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. If I would have been there, that you just needed to be able to stick it out, I would have went under there. Mm-hmm. I don't know why somebody wasn't like, oh, we're just going to hide out underneath this bridge.
They all just kind of went to the beach and were like, all right.
Yeah, everybody just kind of accepted their fate and were like, this is it for us. Yeah. We're gone. Mm-hmm. But me, I would have been like, fuck that noise. I'm gonna hide under this bridge because all you do is need a little bit of darkness. Mm-hmm. And yet I would have stayed there all day until it was dark. And then I would have tried to figure out how to get out of there.
And you do see the original vampire, so the angel vampire, flying, trying to escape everything, trying to go find a hiding spot. But it's implied that it didn't escape and died because while on the boat, what is her name? Lisa. Okay, so Lisa, while on their little boat, while they're sitting out there and the sun comes up, she says, I can't feel my legs. So you know that it's worn off. So that implies literally everybody did die, including the first vampire. So that's how it ends. So you have these two teenagers who are now homeless, familyless.
And paralyzed.
And one of them is paralyzed.
Why do you think they didn't make another... Why do they only think they only did one season of it?
I mean, when I was reading about it, the writer who worked on that, you know, Mike Flanagan, he's really into, like, Stephen King stuff, and he wanted to adapt another story of Stephen King's that was kind of similar to this or something, and I think it's supposed to just really be a standalone. So it's like a Stephen King book, almost, if you think of it that way. It's a standalone story. We had the beginning, we had the end. This is what happened to these people.
Okay.
So I think it was never meant to be, you know, multiple seasons. I think it was just a limited series where we just see the story that plays out.
I mean, realistically, after you got over the first couple of episodes, it got really good.
Yeah, I'd say from episode 3 on, you're just like,
what's going to happen next?
Yeah.
But getting over that hump, you're just like, what is
happening? Yeah, you're kind of like, for the first 2, really. And then, yeah. But I would say once you find out, like, the whole twist with what happened with Pruitt and Father Paul being the same person and... Yeah, no one notices, even though he literally in his house, too. By the way, he has this, like, newspaper article from years and years ago where Monsignor Pruitt is standing in front of the church. And it's the same fucking guy because, you know, it is the same fucking guy. But it's like, have you just seen that?
Yeah, nobody picks up on that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think the town drunk says, oh, man, this could be your son or something like that.
Yeah, like, he notices. And then I do think the mother kind of picks up on it. But again, they're like, oh, these are miracles. And it may have been, I think Bev noticed, I think the same sort of thing or picked up on it. But again, she was like, it's a miracle because she's an idiot.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. So, yeah. So a lot of things happen in this. And I do feel like 3 to 7 are the biggest, you know, parts of the story.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's worth watching.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't dislike it. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was a slow burn
at the beginning. Yeah,
and I thought, oh man, hopefully this is gonna pay off.
Mm-hmm.
But they did so much back work that when the vampires started, you kind of knew all the characters. So mm-hmm. I did appreciate that, and I understand. That's what the first two episodes were, to lay the groundwork on this stuff,
mm-hmm.
and so you can understand that. Slight things are going to happen.
Right.
So I do like the way they did it. Mm-hmm. I like the vampire eyes. They didn't actually have the fangs like normal vampires do.
Mm-mm.
And that's fine. But you got the message that they were clearly creatures of the night.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would rate this probably an 8.
I would give it an 8. Yeah.
Because after you get over the hump, it's mm-hmm. really good.
Yeah.
The writing's really well. The cinematography is really good.
I like all the actors.
The practical effects and the VF effects are great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just a fun ride all the way through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But I think the characters were well done for what the brief time we had to get to know everybody.
Yeah.
Like we said, the subtleties of people looking better, more energy, looking younger as it went on. And it's like you don't notice at first, and all of a sudden you're like, wait a second, you didn't look like that like two episodes ago.
No.
Yeah.
Everybody was so like ragged and old. Mm-hmm. It's like being in a community where all you do is work and work and work, and mm-hmm. you're just waiting to die.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like that at the end of this. They were like young, vibrant,
mm-hmm.
ready to go.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, definitely worth the watch, I would say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
No, I think that's it on this episode.
All right.
Thank you guys for tuning in.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, everybody's entitled to one good scare. Stay spooky out there.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast is produced and hosted by Robbie and Sammy Brooksby as part of the Limitless Broadcasting Podcast Network. Post-production and intro by Sammy Brooksby. Follow the show on Instagram at BoogeymanPod. You can also follow the Limitless Broadcasting Company at Limitless Broadcasting and your horror hosts at Robert1950 Studios and at The Samalam. We also have a TikTok at 1950 Studios. Email your creepy comments and spooky suggestions to us at boogeymanpod@gmail.com. Don't forget, everyone is entitled to one good scare. Have a horrific week!